first of all, if your credit is bad,
let's say the credit bad. Let's assume it's bad. You know, a lot of my partners ain't got it.
Credit ain't gonna get it.
Say, man, they didn't hop, skipped, and jumped out on by 3 or 4 different banks. You know,
second and third chance. Wood Forest ain't messing with me. Yeah, come on, man.
Wood Forest won't take them. You know what I'm saying? Credit Karma just got a shaking my head emoji. You know what I'm saying? So
say, unless Ace Check Cashers start doing mortgages, then right. I ain't gonna get it. Right?
So we look in the wheel. So we come to Will. You know what I'm saying? We want to get right now. We realize we had some errors.
Clean me up, Will.
Yeah, we didn't realize our past mistakes.
Yeah, you know no doubt.
So put me up on game. Where do I start? What do I need to start doing? You know what I'm saying? To get to a spot where I can put, you know, my family in a house.
This is the Literacy Kings podcast. My name is Corey Paul, rapper, creative, and entrepreneur.
Big boy, still thug, jug, hooker, crook. Tried to hide it from a nuke, so they put it in a book.
And I'm Jamarcus Traham, aka Jay with the NBA, investor and teacher.
Started at the bottom, now we black entrepreneurs. It look good on us too. It look good. And we can do it again, cause we did it all before, yeah. Slave ship to ownership, yeah.
So now, we breaking down books to build up culture. We are
the Literacy Kings.
Reading is fundamental.
What up? This is the Literacy Kings podcast, man. Thank y'all for checking us out for another episode. We got a special edition. We're interviewing Will from TAV Properties. And this isn't just a random guy we found off the internet, man. Nah. Me and Will go back to high school, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. He was a young Kobe. You know what I'm saying? He was a young Kobe in high school, man. And we wanted to take advantage of the opportunity for Will to come on the show. Will is a realtor and real estate investor as well. So, you know, on the show, we talk about assets. Mm-hmm. And you can't speak about an asset column without talking about real estate. And so before we check in with Will, you know, as tradition, we got to make sure Jay with the NBA mm-hmm. is good. How you feeling, Jay?
Man, I'm feeling good, man. Good to bring some other people in, yeah. So they can, you know, not hear us so much.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So just know we do have a network of people.
Yeah.
It ain't just us that know stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it's good to be on the other side of the coin, because normally people always ask it.
Us. Yeah. But we finna ask Will.
But now we about to ask Will.
It's popping. Yeah. So yeah, man, without further ado, man, we gonna get it popping. Will, how you feeling, man?
Man, I'm feeling great, man. Thank you, brothers, for having me. Thank you for allowing this discourse to happen, which I think is necessary, especially in this day and age. So thank y'all, man.
For sure, man. So let's start from the beginning, because a lot of times real estate can sound scary, or it can sound big. You know, it feel mm-hmm. like you got to have 6 figures in a bank account before you even think about getting into real estate, period. So can you just take us to kind of your genesis of real estate, you starting your journey?
So basically, yeah, absolutely. So what you just said is paramount. Where people want to start their journey, where people want to feel comfortable. It goes back to, I want to say the simple things, but I call it the big three. Your salary, your credit, and your discipline. And I know the third one is a little bit different for people. They're like, your discipline, I don't mean nothing. What you talking about? But, you know, this is a long term. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. In real estate, you know, especially, we'll just keep on the simplicity of buying a home, for example. When you're talking about, how do I prepare for that? That's always the biggest thing. Everybody wants to buy a house. Everybody wants to buy the nicest house, you know, and rightfully so, you should. That's great. But how to prepare for that? First off, are you really ready for that? And that's a serious question to have. And that goes to the discipline. Mm-hmm. Are you really ready for what, you know, buying a home entails? Because not just buying a home for your family. It's not just buying a home for you. It's really the start of a business for you. It's the start of a future. Right. It's the start of a journey. And you want to make sure that financially, of course, you prepare for that. But long term, you know, is it, you know, do I have the 3.5% down for doing an FHA loan? Do I have the 20% down for doing a conventional loan? Those all sound great. What about the emergencies? What about the risk? How are you assessing that? What are you putting to the side? And that goes a little bit with the discipline as well.
That's good. That's good. So when you first started in started out in real estate, did you start on the investment side or as a realtor?
I first started on the investment side. I got thrown in, got baptized by fire. I had a mentor, man, who this brother, shout out to his name is Najee. Shout out to Najee. But this brother, man, in Houston right now, still owns tons of units, has his own apartment complex and the whole nine. And we used to get our haircut at the same place. And we ended up talking about real estate that way. And he was always telling me, like, man, you got to get some property. That's how you get, you know, start, you know, making money. He's saying all this at the time. I'm living like an apartment. So I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm like, this is crazy. What you mean getting, you know, what? Like, I know there's rent is due on the first.
Right.
I'll make that happen. But he broke down to me one day about, you know, it's not just about getting property. It's about financial freedom. It's about setting yourself up. It's about starting a business and the options that I can give you and the opportunity that I can give you. So I started on the investment side when I started with single family. You know, I started with basically just getting, you know, I was looking for houses with tenants. I was trying to assess my risk because I didn't want to have to go out and find tenants. So I was looking for single family homes that had tenants. Nothing crazy. Everything that was one story. Some older homes. I wasn't that big. You know, some people are like big distressed property people. Like, oh, the worse they are, the better. I'm like, nah, I don't have that kind of budget. So I need them to have some decent bones to them. I need to have some, you know, some decent work done to them, you know, so I can get a good tenant in there. And that's how I got started, just with single family, with low rent, but affordable housing.
Nice. So how did you get started? Right. Like, how do you get the money for your first, you know, for your first property?
Financially,
how do you go about doing it?
So it all depends where you are. For me, I already had my family already had, I bought my first home already. When I started off, I was in apartments, but when I actually got started for real, I bought my first home. So I'd already used the FHA loan. You know what FHA loan is? Federal Housing Authority, you need 3.5% down, you can get you a home. So I'd already used that. So after you utilize your FHA loan, the other way to go is to get a conventional loan. Mm-hmm. Now with a conventional loan, you need 20% down. You know, so we say, you know, I'm getting a $100,000 investment property. Great, you're gonna need $20,000 more than likely plus your closing costs. So for a lot of people, they're like, man, that's insane, but it's not. If you take that time to set, you know, if you take that time and you'd be surprised in your budget where you can save money, where you can put down, you know, $1,000 to the side or $500 to the side, you know, every couple of weeks or whatever, or cut back on something and make that one of your goals and take some action steps going with that to actually save that kind of money. That's where you start doing that with. So it could be from your own job. And of course, I'm a big side hustle person. I tell everybody, I don't care if you're making six figures, seven figures, doesn't even matter. Get you a side hustle because your side hustle can create that income for you for that 20%. And for people out there who don't have an FHA loan, you can actually get a 1-4 unit with 3.5%, you know, and get that FHA loan. So a lot of different areas. But for me, I use conventional.
So, yeah. So you're saying like even with the FHA loan, you can do the 1-4. So it's like a multifamily. You know, sometimes people get a multifamily, they may stay in one part and then rent the other units,
yeah,
out.
House hacking,
like
John. Yeah.
One of the biggest house hacks, right? So getting that 1-4, you live in that one unit, renting the other three, and then with the Federal Housing Authority, depending on the parameters that they have, you can live there for, you know, a certain amount of years, then you're moving out and renting that fourth. Now you got four doors to yourself, and at that point, you probably accumulated enough money either to do it again or to get your own home if that's where you are at that point in life. You know, but it gives you the option at that point to do whatever you like.
So, going back to the beginning of your journey, because that's where we're at right now, what were some of the early mistakes in that time, you know, that you try to that you tell new
war stories,
real estate investors, like, hey,
we don't have enough show to go through all that.
I'm telling you,
we don't have a show to do that, man. I tell everybody, it's risk anywhere you go, right? I don't care if you got the nicest home. I don't care if you got the best tenants. I don't care if you have all the money in the bank. It's risk everywhere. So, of course, I had none of that starting off. I just had my 20%, and I knew that I wanted to, you know, be a landlord and, you know, see what I can do. So I was looking for homes that were basically 1985 and lower, you know, built in 1985 and lower. So my first home was actually built in 1961. North Houston. Shout out to North Houston. so I got my first, you know what I'm saying? So off of Little York, actually. My first one was off of Little York. Okay. And got a property out there, one story, about 1,400 square feet. And man, I was so excited because I saw it on Hard and I saw it on some email blast. So I'm like, I'm stoked, right? I'm up there like, oh, yeah, this is about to go down. I'm about to get up here and start my journey, start my business off. And I get to the house and I'm like, man, this is awful. Like, who in their right mind would buy this? And it's like, you did that. You bought this house. And now it goes on because the garage was like rotted out. I had termite damage. I had plumbing damage, plumbing issues. I had, you name it, I had it basically.
Yeah.
But
so you bought it, you know,
it was bought it basically sight unseen, brother. I literally saw it on pictures. I literally saw, because in the investment world, it moves very fast. Investment world is like,
yeah, you might
they send an email blast out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They send an email blast out. It's like, look, you're going to put this earnest money down or what? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because it might be gone before you blink. So the price point that it was at was an attractive price point. I wanted to start buying under $100,000. That was my goal. And I was fortunate enough to buy it at about $85,000. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, I just noticed like everything was a problem. Like I had, you know, old fence. I had like I had termites going. I had, you know, some roof damage. I had AC, you know, had never been, you know, maintained or taken care of. So I had a lot going on. And on top of that, I was coming into it with tenants. And that was a big thing.
It was already
tenants there, already occupied. So I'm coming in there with tenants, and I'm like, you know, and here's the cold thing. Like, I didn't get a property manager. So like a lot of people, they first do to get a property manager.
I was about to ask you about that.
Yeah,
pay that 10%. Right?
Pay 10%, right? Yeah. And it's like, okay, cool, I'm done. So I thought I had a different philosophy. I was like, okay, you know what? Why don't I pocket that 10% for maintenance issues and build a great relationship with my tenants? And that way they can stay more and I can take care of them. They can be here, you know, for a while. And I was able to do that. I was very hands-on with my tenants. I was that guy, if something happened in the middle of the night, they were calling me, you know, but I gave them the opportunity to do that. I gave them that space to do that. So if something happened, like I remember one night they're like, man, the pipe went out and there's water everywhere. I was like, cut the water off. I'll be there in the morning. I ain't coming tonight, but I'll be there in the morning, you know, but it was all that. It was, you know, I gave them leeway. You know, we worked some things out. With rent, we worked some things out with just fact finding, you know, issues for them. And one thing that changed from their previous owner was I fixed the house up for them. I told them, I said, give me your top five things that, you know, you're concerned about here. And they said, oh, it's this, 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 and this. And I said, cool. And I fixed it up for them. And they were like, man, we'll stay here as long as you keep doing what you're doing. You know, we love you. And they told me that. I was shocked from hearing that from a tenant, but just that customer service piece, you know, helped out a ton.
Right. So that property, your first property, you definitely sound like you definitely have to put a lot more money in it and time than you would have hoped for. But did that eventually turn into a win for you, or did you have to watch that ultimately as like that's one of the that's just hard knock? You know what I'm saying?
It ultimately did turn into a win. I mean, the thing I was fortunate about that being like one of my first properties is I was able to build a team. And that's one thing I stress to a lot of investors, man, build you a team,
good,
you know,
good.
Interview people, find an AC guy, an HVAC guy, find, you know, an electrician, find a plumber, find a roofer, you know, and build relationships. This whole process, this whole investing real estate deal period, it's about relationships. If you get great people on your team, they're going to go to bat for you no matter what. They're going to help you in situations no matter what. And I was able to do that. I was able to start getting a lot of different, you know, contractors and technicians coming my way who I was talking to them and I was building relationships with them. And fortunately, I wasn't paying top dollar for everything. I was making deals. I was like, man, I'm do this. And I got another property coming, do this for, you know, but I was making relationships with them and I was finding
selling
solutions
futures.
For them.
I call that selling futures. You selling futures.
Exactly. I'm like, you can get on the ground floor, man.
Yeah, for real.
That's
you know, and that helped a lot. Yeah.
So that story is valuable, man. Cause see, that's what you don't see on Instagram. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's not the part of the real estate world that's glamorized, you know, is those type of hard knocks. So it's dope to know that so that when new investors, you know, do jump down, they understand that full scope. So that's dope. So going from there, you know, so you learn, you're growing, you're building, you know, you're building out, you know, your portfolio and things like that and putting a team together. Right. Mm-hmm. So then, mm-hmm. So then at some point you become a licensed realtor as well. Right.
Correct.
Okay. And so tell us about the concept of why you went that route in addition to being an investor.
It really started from my own experience, myself and my wife. We bought our first home that we ever bought years ago now, which is crazy. We used a realtor, good lady, you know, a friend of mine who helped us out to get it. And we used her also on the second home, but it was some customer service things that I wasn't really feeling. It was some things that it was some things my wife and I wanted from her that we weren't, you know, quite getting. And it's not a knock on her. She did a great job. She did her job beautifully. Now I would recommend her. It was the fact of I saw myself in her position if I had a customer. You know what I mean? So I looked at it to the standpoint of I had friends who wanted to get homes. I had coworkers who wanted to get homes. And it was to the point of how would I use my own customer service to help them? So remember when I bought a home, I wanted a realtor to kind of, you know, not hold my hand, but really walk me through the process because I didn't know. Yeah. When you're a first time homeowner, you're going in blind. If you didn't come from a family of homeowners, if you didn't come from, you know, a reference point that actually, you know, they were buying homes before you and all that good stuff, then you're kind of blind in this process. And what a realtor can do for you at that point is really, really walk you through and really educate you on what you need to know, what you're looking for. And you need that. So for me, when I bought, you know, the first home that I got and then going from there, it was like, you know what? My wife made a huge point. She goes, "You're an investor, right? You know how black women get. They'll tell you in a minute how you're supposed to, you know what I'm saying? They're going to tell you from the rip. Like, look, you talk about you an investor. My wife was like, why don't you become a realtor and broker your own deals and, you know, and help your own people that way? Because she goes, the fact that you're learning all this, you can give that information to them. And I was like, at first I was like, man, you crazy. I don't want to do that. That's showing houses at 6 o'clock at night, we got kids. Like, you're losing your mind. Yeah. But, you know, she was absolutely right because it wasn't just about, you know, becoming a realtor and selling deals, but it was the knowledge that I was gaining from that. The knowledge I was gaining while I was, you know, getting my real estate license, the knowledge I was gaining from home ownership and cultivating and putting all that together. And once all that accumulated, it got to the point of, okay, now that I can use as a realtor in my arsenal to help people, to tell people what they should do as far as from the financial standpoint. To tell people about credit, to tell people about what they should look for in a home, to talk about equity, you know, so all those things that after that came together. So for me, that's why I wanted to become a realtor because it was like, you know what, I can use all this knowledge, I can use, you know, this experience, you know, to help somebody like myself.
That's dope.
You know what I thought you was going to say? I thought you was going to say you had a hard time following up because a lot of times realtors don't make the high commission off the investment property because we trying to buy it low. Cause that's the issue I had. Like I couldn't find a good realtor on my primary home. Yeah. They want the expensive house. Yeah. But on the investment property, bro, they ain't really trying to deal with it. So I have to seek a will. I have to find a will of someone who is an investor as well.
Right.
So they'll say, oh bro, I understand where you're coming from when you're trying to buy this. It might not be the highest commission for you per se, but you coming from an investment standpoint, you know, okay, this might be good for you, Jay, because from an investment standpoint, you feel what I'm saying? And I had issues. I'm pretty sure you can relate. Having issues to this. Oh, they don't really want to go to that one because, you know, you trying to buy something with equity already in. You feel me?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I thought you was going to say.
Okay, so moving from there, let's get into kind of the foundational parts of buying a house, right? So one of the things I know that you've mentioned before is bank relationships and credit. So man, you know, a lot of my partners ain't got it.
Ain't gonna get it.
Say, man, they didn't hop, skipped, and jumped out on by three or four different banks. You know,
second and third chance. Wood Forest ain't messing with me. Man, come on, man.
Will Forrest won't take him. You know what I'm saying? Credit Karma just got a shaking my head emoji. You know what I'm saying? So
say, unless Ace Check Cash and start doing mortgages, then I ain't gonna get it. Right?
So we look in the wheel. So we come to Will. You know what I'm saying? We want to get right now. We realize we had some errors.
Clean me up, Will.
Yeah, we didn't realize our past mistakes.
Yeah, you know no doubt.
So be up on game. Where do I start? What do I need to start doing? You know what I'm saying? To get to a spot where I can put, you know, my family in a house.
No doubt. So first off, if your credit is bad,
let's assume it's bad.
So first thing is, like I said, I tell everybody this: be very realistic with where you are. Be very realistic about that. Be very, because it helps you create better goals. It helps you actually create better discipline. So if your credit is not where it needs to be for a house, and when I say not where it needs to be, now let's just talk about that for a second. For an FHA loan, your credit score minimum, I know they want, in a lot of cases, they want 580 credit, but most lenders are looking for like 640 and above, right? So let's say your credit's not there. The first thing, if it's not there, I strongly advise everybody, get a credit specialist. Talk to, you know, a credit counselor. Have that conversation and don't be prideful about that. You know, my credit was not always where it is now. What even close? I'm not talking like, you know, you're talking to 700. No, I'm talking about when I was in my late 20s, I was kind of looking funny, like, man, you know what I'm saying? I can't do too much. But at the same time, I had to be realistic about that and say, you know what? Okay, where do I go? And I went to a credit specialist and they told me, look, this is what it's going to take. This is how much it's going to cost for you to do it, but this is what we're going to do for you. And, you know, and then start building that discipline. You know, if you haven't been paying your bills on time, start that. If you're using too much of your credit usage,
yeah,
you know, cut that down to 10%. You know, if that's at 50%, you know, be gradual, because I always say this: you did not get bad credit, you did not get into debt overnight. So don't expect to get out of it overnight either. You know what I mean? So if it took you 5 years to build bad credit, well, hopefully it'll take you 2.5 to get good credit. You know, but give it that time to do that. Don't say, okay, I need this done in 30 days. I got to have 700 credit in 30 days so I can go get a house. Right. No.
Put that trade line on there, man. Yeah. Put that trade line on there, man.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Catch me up. That's
good. And that's the thing. It's like, no, you want to be very, very disciplined about that and say, you know what? Look, because here's the deal. In that journey of you getting your credit good, it's going to teach you a lot. You're going to start creating habits at that point. Mm-hmm. Then it's going to be, okay, you know what? Now I'm also saving and getting my credit better at the same time. And you'll start to see that as it goes. You start to see that come to fruition. So I tell everybody, if your credit's bad, no, talk to a credit counselor. I have some great ones in my team that are definitely, you know, really, really good at it. But no, please talk to somebody. Don't be prideful about that.
That's dope. So, okay, bet. So now, bank relationships. How do you start a relationship other than, you know, you get your direct deposit, you go get money when you need it, you pay them late fees when you know that they ain't hit you. How do you actually start a relationship with a bank? Is there a method to that? How do you go about that?
To me, well, there's different ways to answer that, but it also starts, well, you're right. For one, it could be direct deposit with your bank. You know, don't underestimate that. You actually having your money in that bank does mean something. But I tell a lot of people, start another account. Case in point, if you are financing a vehicle, finance it through that bank as well. If you have a savings account, if you have a 403B, or if you have a regular savings account, finance with that. No, not finance, but, you know, have that account with that bank as well. We start doing things like that, and start accumulating. You're keeping good bank relationships. Not getting any overdrafts is also creating a good bank relationship. So when you start doing things like that and putting, you know, accounts with that bank and several accounts with that bank over time, what you're doing is creating over time a really good business bank relationship. So when it comes down to, you know what, I want to buy a house or I want to start a business, that bank is more inclined to do business with you. Banks want to lend money.
Right.
You know, I think that's one thing. A lot of people,
they have to survive. You know,
exactly. People, I'm going to just save myself. You know, I'm going to save over time and I'll accumulate. That's great. And you can, but the proper way to use a bank will help your business exponentially. It will help you get a home exponentially. It's just, no, they want to help you. They want to lend money to you, but you have to do what you got to do as far as on a credit standpoint, you know, and building a relationship with that bank.
Right, right. So I know it's a lot of there's a lot of different types of loans, mm-hmm. right? You know, we've talked about some of them on the show, VA loan, you know, you have NACA, that's, you know, a type of loan, and you have, you know, all these different type of loans. Are there any that you like to bring to light that maybe people don't know about, or, you know, that you think are a good look for people to look into, or, you know, any hidden gems, anything?
Sure. I mean, there's 203K. There's which are loans that can be used to actually, if you're on the investment side, there's loans that you can use like 203K to help actually build and maintain your investment property with that. Conventional loans are really good. Don't let that 20% scare you with conventional loans too. There are a lot of lenders right now who will pay for, they call them, you know, fix and flip loans, for example. Mm-hmm. Basically, they'll pay you to get the home and then rehab as well, and they're paying for that. FHA loans, just, I always say this, if you're, you know, starting on your journey, you want to buy a home. If you say, you know what, investing is not really for me, I just want to get a home for my family, there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. Go ahead and get an FHA loan. Now, I say that with FHA for the specific purpose of that 3.5%. You know, I don't want everybody to think that I have to go in with 20%, because one thing that I think everybody needs to do is also have an emergency fund if anything does happen. Don't put all your eggs in that one basket. You know, right. Make sure you save 6 to 9 months, or I always say 9 months to a year in your emergency fund before you're ready to buy your house. Because when you do that, that 3.5% isn't a big deal for an FHA loan at that point. And if something does happen, you have, you know, some resources at that point to mitigate a lot of that risk. But fix and flip, buy and hold loans if you're investing as well. A lot of people like doing, you know, when they get their home, you know, get their home, doing a 30-year loan on it. Different lenders have different stipulations. Some lenders will tell you that there's, you know, prepayment penalties. Some lenders say, you know what, we do ARM loans. If you know what those mean, those basically, ooh, they, no. they can get a little tricky. So I kind of say it's an ARM loan. So the investment side is different than the single family buying side. But at the same time, just educating yourself on those, because at the end of the day, it's all money that can also help you start your business and really jumpstart your life. So educating right. yourself on all those type of loans, FHA, conventional, 203K, really just do your homework on those and they can help you out.
Do you have any opinion on 15 versus 30 year mortgages?
I always say it's just better to crunch your numbers. I'm not going to make a blanket statement because everybody's life is different. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to tell you, yeah, do 30 because of this. Now, I will say this just from a personal standpoint, even from a, you know, a relative standpoint, I tell my clients, you know what's best for you when it comes to money. Now, I can definitely kind of crunch your numbers for you. I can tell you what you should do, but at the end of the day, you're going to pick what you want to pick. The deal with a 30-year loan, though, that I like is this. You can always overpay on your home. You're not under that risk of...
That's what I said.
You're not under that
always
risk.
Always go with the 30. Stretch absolutely. Out the payment and then make principal payments.
You can, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with 15-year loan. I know, you know, Dave Ramsey is over there beating people in the head with 15 years.
You know how I feel about Dave.
Same
yeah,
Dave, you know, he has some savory words for Dave Ramsey.
God bless Dave Ramsey. He's made a great living on saying what he believes is correct for his community. So, you know, God bless Dave, but I'll say this from people who are starting. I was very blessed in my life. You know, I started from nothing and, you know, I'm still working every day. But if I didn't have some of these loans, I wouldn't have gotten started. I wouldn't have gotten the opportunity. You know, these loans open a lot of doors for me as well.
You still be waiting, man.
I mean, Dave, he's like, you know, save and buy all cash. I'm like, Dave, baby.
I'm going to be 68 before.
Yeah. Like, Dave, I would love to get my house before I'm 81. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so it's just, you know, that's part of it. But 30 year loans, in my opinion, are, in my opinion, a better way to go because, like I said, you can also overpay and pay that principal more. You can also put more. One thing that's not talked about enough, in my opinion, is escrow. Escrow on your loan is huge. Taxes are always
bust
changing.
Bust it down. Take your time. But what do you mean?
So with escrow, for example, on let's say you have a 30-year loan or a 15-year loan, doesn't matter. You can make an extra payment, which is called an escrow payment. What that escrow payment does is over, let's say, the 12-month period, you can build that up. And then your taxes on your home, your property taxes or your school taxes or your MUD taxes on your home are going to be due at the end of that year. Now, what escrow does, as opposed to you trying to scramble and get that money together by the end of the year, you've accumulated over time, and over time you have enough money in an escrow account to pay off your taxes, no matter what they are.
Good.
People say, well, why is that important? You know, I'm also gonna pay my taxes off. Taxes can change quickly. You know, taxes can change to a point, you know, once your appraisal value starts to go up on your home, also if you're in a new neighborhood and they start building something on commercial, you know, business coming in, that's gonna raise your taxes.
If you don't have money, period.
Absolutely.
Your taxes is
they put a Amazon facility in your neighborhood.
No doubt. You look up and all of a sudden it's like, I got Chick-fil-A, I got Chipotle, I got, you know, I got all this going on. You know, who's paying for that? Who's helping with, you know, that's increasing your neighborhood. That's increasing the value in your neighborhood. So because of that, taxes will change. So that escrow account allows you to, you know, you put more into it. It's also part of, normally it's also part of your payment on your loan. It's also part of your mortgage. But putting more into the escrow account is always a key factor, because if you put enough in there as well and you pay your taxes off, if you have a surplus, make sure they send you a check back, which you can do anything you want with it. One thing I advise is putting that right back into the escrow account, or putting that into principal on your home and paying it down quicker as well. So, but you want to give yourself those options with that escrow account.
I like what you said about the 6 to 9 months of emergency fund, because one thing that people get hit with when you talk about escrow is that analysis after that first year. And they be thinking, oh, okay, I'm good. My payment is this amount, this amount, right?
Yeah.
But like you said, they're making changes in the neighborhood, or your insurance go up, or your taxes go up even more so. Then be like, but I just got this analysis statement, and they say not only is my mortgage going up, but and so that means every more money gonna come out each month. Mm-hmm. That means that's gonna affect your budget now. Mm-hmm. But they say, but if you got this amount of money, if you just send us this chunk of money, then it's only gonna go up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ain't got that money,
right,
we just gonna do it in 12 payments. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Go ahead, Will.
No, I'm saying, no, that's a great point. And Jay, check this out too. This is happening for a lot of people who are buying in new subdivisions. So that means that your home was built, you're the first one to live in. It was built for you. And what's happening for a lot of people is they're learning about escrow the hard way. Mm. Because when your home is getting built, it's getting appraised where it is.
On the land value.
Mm. On the land value. So your first year, for example, that you live in your home, you might see your home might be a $300,000 house. But the first year that you get appraised for it, they might have your appraisal value at like $140,000. You're like, well, why is that? Because they appraised it while it was getting built. Mm-hmm. Not on the finish. while it was getting built. So your first year, you might be like, oh, man, I got all this escrow money. This is cool. Mm-hmm. This is great. You start getting kind of cocky and prideful. And all of a sudden you look up. And then next year, that new appraisal comes in. Mm-hmm. And the new appraisal is the total land value with your home complete at that point. And, you know, a lot of people, I've had friends who they look at that escrow and say, wait, why is my mortgage going up $400 now a month?
What happened, bro?
Why?
Crazy.
Exactly. So just, like I said, the education behind that is something you have to really understand. That's why escrow is really, really important.
That's good, man. That's a good game. I'm going to ask you one more question about the home buying process, and then we're going to get into more of the generational side of it, generational wealth and success and things like that. But grant programs, are there any grant programs that you've seen work or you recommend, or just in general that you would encourage people to check out?
They're kind of evolving. You actually have more, it's not a knock on any president, but you had more grant programs under the Obama administration. You had more first-time home buyer credits and things like that under the Obama administration. There are still some out there. For example, NACA is a great help to our community with when it comes to one, educating yourself on home buying, but two, giving you a down payment assistance. There's about 3 to 5 down payment assistance programs that I like. Like NACA is one of them. There's a couple that I would like to kind of, they're a longer name, and I kind of want to get into those. I'll send some to your listeners or something like that.
Yeah, we'll link them in the show notes.
But just to be on the safe side, just for time's sake, you can Google down payment assistance programs and talk to your lender For first-time home buyers, there's always something that you can get. There's always either some closing cost assistance with new build properties. A lot of times that new build property, once a builder wants you to use their lender. That lender normally will help with closing cost assistance and down payment assistance as well. So,
dope. That's good. That's good. That's good. Okay, man. So, as kind of rounding this off, the foundation of this, we hear a lot, and you hear even more when you're starting to listen, but we hear about generational wealth building, right? We hear about that, and we hear about the wealth gap continuing to widen, right? And we also see that ownership, home ownership, especially if, you know, people of color, is actually trending down over the years.
Correct, less than 40%. Well, somewhere around 40%.
Yeah. So being someone that lives, you know what I'm saying, real estate, you're a realtor and you're a real estate investor, and you've built your career off of it. Can you really, you know, just break down when you speak about generational wealth and building wealth through your home and the importance of it for our community, with some you know, practicality, you know, that you can put to that to help, you know, our listeners really make sense of, you know what I'm saying, how they can do it, because sometimes they come in from a place where they seem so far away.
Absolutely. I think one thing is you have more power than you think you have when you're in home ownership. So you know, what I mean by that is this: when you have your grandmother, your grandparents, or your parents, and maybe they had a fixer-upper home that's not in the best case, maybe it's a, you know, $140,000, $100,000 property that, you know, got passed down. Unfortunately, the mindset, you know, for a lot of our people has been to, when they passed away, or if you got that inherited, let me sell it, get the quick money, and get out of it.
And then Don't sell grandma's house, man.
And that happens a lot. I can tell you some neighborhoods right now where it happens a lot. It's happened a lot. And you say, okay, well, you know, they got their money, they could start a business with that. They could, absolutely. But the problem is, it's not going to be passed to another generation. That is tangible land. That's a tangible asset that could be passed down and started with something. And if they would have kept that property, they could have borrowed against it, the refi loan, and took that and said, you know what, I'm going to use that money and buy another property. Now I have a cash flowing asset, and I have another property, and I can repeat the process and repeat the steps. You look at a lot of people who are rich in real estate. They do things like that. They say, okay, great, 70%. I got these properties, you know, passed down. 70%. Yeah, I got these properties passed down. That's what we're going to do. You touched on Black home ownership, and the numbers that I've seen recently, it says 41%. And a big reason of that, is there still, you know, unfortunate practices going on in some cases? Yes.
No, Wells Fargo, no, man.
Yeah. No question about it. But at the same time, I think it also starts from the standpoint of, what's their point of reference? Did their parents own a home? Did their grandparents own a home? Mm-hmm. And also, too, why do they think that home ownership is, they have to see the value in home ownership for them. Mm-hmm. You have to see the value in home ownership for your children and for future generations from there. So it's not about buying a home for you. You're not fighting for your first name. You're fighting for your last. So if that's the case, with that being the case, then you getting that home, and then it's not about getting the $400,000, the $500,000 home. If you're blessed enough to do that, have at it. But why don't you start with a starter home for a second and let that build and build equity? You know, stay in it for 3 to 5 years and watch, especially in this crazy Houston market that you see properties growing $10,000 a year or more. Why don't you stay in it for a while and then say, you know what, I got $40,000, $50,000 in equity. Let me borrow against that. Start another home, you know what I mean? And now I'm not just starting a home, I'm building a business. I'm passing down a business to my kids. I'm passing down a business generationally now. I have tangible assets that I can pass down. And that's where it starts to really, you know, you start to really kind of see that gap. The gap that you guys are talking about too is a knowledge gap. It's an information gap. It's the fact of, you know, our white counterparts, they've been property owners, they've been landowners. And because they've been property owners and landowners, they're passing that skill down to their kids. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I had a coworker years ago who, she was 22, fresh out of college. And I said, man, great, graduated. She was talking to me and she was like, what you're going to do now? I said, you're going to, you know, get an apartment? She goes, no, absolutely not. My parents have saved up $60,000 for me to buy a home. And I'm going, you know, I'm going looking for houses, you know, next week. At 22 years old, 22 years old. So she's going to be, she was a homeowner at 22. Her parents, you know, gave her, you know, helped her with the financing, obviously, but just the mindset of that, that I'm not even looking to rent. That's totally outside of my realm. I'm not, that's unheard of. Yeah. Not even thinking about it. That's totally, that's crazy talk. So we have to get to that point, you know, as a people to say, you know what, do I see the value in home ownership? Are there other ways to make money? Yeah. There's a stock market. There's tons of other ways, but with real estate, especially where we are now, in this society, it is going to be the foundation to start generational wealth for your family.
I love it, man. Say, bro, I love that one line. I'm not fighting for my, you're not fighting for your first name. You're fighting for your last.
Yeah.
That's hard. That's hard because that's a big part of how we get ahead, right? Or how we progress is understanding that it's like civil rights, right? Yeah. Civil rights movement for our people. They couldn't be fighting for what they could see. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like I'm only going to do stuff that's going to affect me right now. It's like, ah, no, bro. Like, you know, y'all, you know, like Morton said, you know, I might not get to the mountaintop with you. You know what I mean? And I feel like, you know, that's exactly, you know, how we should be feeling. And I know you're big on get a game away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like this is foundational information. So get a game away.
I caught flack for that. Actually, I caught flack from a guy on Instagram.
Really?
He was like, man, you telling people that give all this information away. You know, if they have a course or something, they want to, you know, somebody to pay for it, they should be able to pay for it. I said, man, I 100% agree. If you have a business that you're giving courses away for, you know, I'm sorry, selling courses for 25 or 30 or whatever amount of money you're selling it for, I'm not saying don't continue that. But what I am seeing, there's so many young people who are hungry for this business, who are hungry to learn, who are hungry to start in this, and nobody's talking to them. Nobody's telling them this is how you do it. And people who are successful, I mean, I see a lot of people on Instagram talking about I'm a boss. I see that all the time. I'm a boss. I'm this, this, and that. You know, I'm killing in the game. I'm driving this Mercedes. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fantastic. But talk about, you're showing me the game. Let's talk about practice a little bit. How did you accumulate that? What are the hardships that you're going through? People need to hear those things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Go AI on them real quick. But it's like, but it's like they need to hear that. They need to hear that, you know,
no
this is, you know, the difficulties in this and you know, the hardships and the stress that it might be at times. But at the end of the day, it's teaching them, it's giving the game away for free. So they say, you know what? Now they have that discernment. Now they can decide for themselves what they want to do with that information.
Yeah. You know, and when you say that, it just makes me think about like that. Because when you said it initially about, you know, giving the game away free, we're like, yeah, of course. No, me and Jay, we got a whole podcast.
We
know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? We literally got an episode where Jay walked, because Jay didn't put together, I don't even know how many LLCs and nonprofits. You know what I'm saying? So it's an episode where he literally just, what you would probably have to pay somebody a stack for, he just walked you through, go to this website, fill out it, you know what I mean? So we believe in it 100%. What you said about it is powerful because it made me think about how a lot of times in a good way to look at it is like in the tech world, they have the freemium model, right? Like they give it away, give it away, give it away, give it away. And they even losing money. The whole goal is to get as many people as possible. And they're like, if we get all these people, we'll find a way to make money.
Right. And we got the data off that.
Yeah, but for us, a lot of times, in because we come up with such a survival mentality, by the time we get 20, 30 people in the dough, we try and charge it per head. You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? See how much we can make off the bar. And it's, you know, so that's what it makes me think about, having to have that longer vision.
You look at other cultures too, right? And this is no disrespect to any other culture out there. But you look at, you know, you look at Asians, you look at, you know, Africans, you look at Europeans, you look at the Caucasians, you look at everybody who's out there, right? And people say, well, you still got to work hard. Like you just said, that's about mentality. That's great. But you think another Asian man is telling his Asian brethren, hey man, I'll give it to you for $50. Mm. Or I'm going to teach you the business. And you do what you do with it. I'm gonna give you the information. You do what you do with it. I've watched it on a daily basis. I've watched, you know, I have, you know, the cool thing about where I live is it's a diversity. You know, it's a very diverse neighborhood. And I talk to my neighbors. I have Indian neighbors. And I was talking to him one day, and he said, four of us are living here at one point. We got this. We were all paying the bills on it. We were all, you know, paying the principal down. We got to the point where we paid the principal down enough to where we can refinance. He took that money. He bought a home with that. Another brother who was living here took that money and bought a home with that.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you know, the biggest takeaway with all of that is it's a mindset thing. It's not about, it's mentality. It's not about, you know, I got to one up my, you know, we're not, these things Black people, I say this all the time, we're not in competition with each other.
Right.
We're in relationship with each other. So if that's the case, we need to really, you know, really understand that to say, you know what, why don't I figure out a way I can help, not in, not flaunt. Let me figure out a way that I can assist, you know, and not take away. And when you start to get in that space of that non-competing space, so many doors open.
Man, that's powerful, Will. That's powerful. Man, Jay, did you have anything you wanted to ask before we get out of here?
No, just salute you.
Yeah.
Appreciate you, what you're doing.
If you're because you're, it sounds like you're an educator as well. Like you're not just doing what you do, but you're teaching in the process.
Right.
And that lines up with the whole Literacy King mantra and mission.
Thanks.
So just salute you and keep Mack trucking your industry, bro.
Appreciate
y'all, man. Appreciate y'all. For all your listeners, man, please hit me at Will E State on Instagram. Shoot me a DM. I would love to talk to you guys. Love to help anybody out that I possibly can. And appreciate you guys, man. Y'all doing God's work out here, man. So I appreciate
you. Yeah, my brother. I appreciate that, man. And all Will's info will be linked in the show notes. And if y'all want Will back on as an expert from time to time, you know what I mean? If y'all want Will to...
You might get my head big over here. A lot of experts.
Chop up some subject expert, you know what I'm saying? Chop up some lessons. Y'all let us know. We would love that. Will, thank you, bro. Thank you for taking your time, man, giving us the game and a real dope perspective. I appreciate it, brother.
No, man, thank y'all. I appreciate it. My pleasure.
All right, man. Y'all make sure y'all stay locked in to the next Literacy Kings news, the next Literacy Kings podcast.